Greetings and welcome to Throttle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Throttle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing. And the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America or a story of Americans, a story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, a radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring, but for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up for this week. Again, I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith. And we are, we have completed the special edition on aviation safety, which we did over the last 3 weeks. And the reason for that, of course, was the situation that had developed with the Boeing 737 MAX airplane and its worldwide grounding and a search for a solution for the two recent accidents. And that, of course, is ongoing. We don't really have much more to report at the present time. There is a continuing series of articles that are being written and published in the various newspapers and publications, but nothing really is new. I've been kind of following it for various reasons. One, of course, is I want to stay on top of it for this radio show. And also, as a longtime aviation professional, I wanted to stay abreast of the industry, see what's going on, and make sense out of it as much as I can, and maybe provide some clarity and some understanding of what's going on in this industry. It's a very important industry for all kinds of reasons, lifestyle, quality of life, business. I mean, you name it. This industry is vital in our modern industrial society, as well as this wonderful country. This industry is vital. And it really, we need to make sure that it's a viable industry and continues to be viable, and to learn our lessons in a very intelligent way, if in fact there are lessons to be learned. And I think in this case, as well as most cases that have occurred in this industry, there are lessons to be learned, and we should really take them very seriously and not be afraid of confronting sacred cows and other parochial interests, but to look at things objectively and to come to a series of conclusions and recommendations and implementation of viable recommendations that will have a very measurable and positive effect on the performance of the industry, and particularly in the area of flight safety. Flight safety, of course, has always been a crucial part of the aviation community. Most organizations have their own flight safety department that is supposed to stay on top of things and prevent these catastrophes from occurring. And of course, that brings up, or it begs the question, what happened to flight safety and the flight safety organizations? Did they miss something here in this particular situation, this particular tragedy? Did they miss something? And well, you know, I would say that so far, from what I understand it to be, I would say yes, they probably did miss something, and so we need to understand the situation from that perspective. If we have these safety departments, are they supposed to be proactive? And if they are, how do they become proactive, and how do they maintain their proactive status? Great questions here, and I think we should consider them as we go forward. Okay, nevertheless, what we're going to do here is shift gears for a bit. We have lots of other things that we need to cover in going forward with Throttle Up Radio. And today we're going to be talking about mostly, it's going to be what is being billed, as had been billed, as the debate of the century. It's a debate. And oh, by the way, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. This is a radio essay. So we're going to look at, we're going to consider this show as being predominantly our radio essay. Of course, radio essay is a third part of the Throttle Up radio and podcast, radio show and podcast. Typically, we have part one is critical thinking, part two is the storyboard, and part three is the radio essay. We're going to invert that and put the radio essay first and foremost. The radio essay is going to be about this debate. I'll repeat it. They say it's the debate of the centuries between Jordan Peterson and a proponent of capitalism, if you will, and it is with his opponent in this debate is a gentleman, and forgive me if I don't pronounce this entirely correctly. It's a little bit difficult to pronounce. I'll do my best here. His first name is Slev Oj, and his last name is Zizek, Dr. Slev Oj Zizek. And he is a professor in some university in Europe, and I don't have that in front of me. I apologize for that, but it's not something that I recognized. Anyway, now the debate was held in Toronto, and the title of the debate is Happiness, Capitalism versus Marxism. And the way the debate is being organized or was organized was into four parts. Part one is 30 minutes given to each of the debaters. Now, Jordan Peterson went first, so he gets the first 30 minutes, and his opponent, Dr. Zizek, gets the second 30 minutes, and then there's going to be 10 minutes each, has a opportunity for rebuttal, and then finally it's going to be a question and answer session. All right, so the first 30 minutes, Jordan Peterson, I have been through this. You can find it on YouTube, by the way, and it is it's well worth your while. I would highly recommend it. You can go to Jordan Peterson channel, YouTube channel, and find it. And also, he has other great videos, very, very popular, by the way, as his videos are, and as a personality, fascinating personality. And I am favorably impressed, frankly, with not only with his intellectual depth and his insight, but his way of presenting an argument is really quite extraordinary, a very extraordinary individual. And so, by all means, visit his YouTube channel, read his book, the 12 Rules of Life, a very useful, very important book. I have my own copy, and I have read it, and I'm rereading it as we go forward. So anyway, I'm going to start off as I try to get this audio system working properly. Had a little bit of trouble this morning with it. We do have, of course, this is recorded in our recording studio here. And then we pass on the recording, the raw recording, to the audio production facility that is located right outside of Denver in Evergreen, Colorado. It's called Evergroove Studios. I think you have, it's always giving credit on the front end of each show. And so they do the final post-production work, editing and refining and improving the sound quality as best as possible. And so we're very pleased to be working with those folks. They do a great job. Okay, so let me play this. I'm going to play a brief audio excerpt from this YouTube video. Sound quality is a little bit iffy at the moment. We're going to do our best here and see if we can get this thing working properly. So we'll give it a shot. This is going to be just a few minutes of opening remarks by Jordan Peterson in this debate of the century, this happiness, capitalism versus Marxism debate. Now, and the reason why I'm going to play this is for a very important, very important purpose, which is Jordan Peterson is saying some things that are really quite profound. And he also, by the way, I'm happy to announce that he's also using terms like critical thinking. All right. So that bolsters our position and the purpose of this show as we go forward. And so I'm happy to have him supporting the community, the critical thinking community, of which I am a part of, and I continue to be a part of this community as we go forward. And so I'm going to play this this short audio clip that we have, and it's going to set the stage for our discussion going forward on this debate and this whole notion of Marxism, neo-Marxism, that it's that's prevalent across the world, and why is it here? Why do people subscribe to such a thing? Where did it come from, and how should we think about it, and how should we deal with it? And that's one of the things that we are confronted with as members of a modern industrial society. This didn't occur, of course, until the Industrial Revolution was in full swing. And so why did this idea emerge from the midst of the Industrial Revolution? Great question. We'll answer that, hopefully, as we go forward. So here is a brief clip of the opening remarks that Jordan Peterson presents at this debate of the century.
Playoff games.
So I don't know what to make of that. That's
all right. So how did I prepare for this? I familiarized myself to the degree that was possible with Slavoj Žižek's work, and that wasn't that possible because he has a lot of work and he's a very original thinker, and this debate was put together in relatively short order. And what I did instead was return to what I regarded as the original cause of all the trouble, let's say, which was the Communist Manifesto. And what I attempted to do, because that's Marx, and we're here to talk about Marxism, let's say, and what I tried to do was read it. And to read something, you don't just follow the words and follow the meaning, but you take apart the sentences and you ask yourself at this level of phrase and at the level of sentence and at the level of paragraph, is this true? Are there counter-arguments that can be put forward that are credible? Is this solid thinking? And I have to tell you, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, that I have rarely read a tract. Now, I read it when I was 18. It was a long time ago, right? That's 40 years ago. But I've rarely read a tract that made as many errors per sentence, conceptual errors per sentence, as the Communist Manifesto. It was quite a miraculous reread. It was interesting to think about it psychologically as well, because I've read student papers that were of the same ilk in some sense, although I'm not suggesting that they were of the same level of glittering literary brilliance and polemic quality. And I also understand that the Communist Manifesto was a call for revolution and not a standard logical argument. But that notwithstanding, I have some things to say about the authors psychologically. The first thing is that it doesn't seem to me that either Marx or Engels grappled with this particular fundamental truth, which is that almost all ideas are wrong. And so it doesn't matter if they're your ideas or someone else's ideas, they're probably wrong. And even if they strike you with the force of brilliance, your job is to assume, first of all, that they're probably wrong, and then to assault them with everything you have in your arsenal and see if they can survive. And what struck me about the Communist Manifesto was it was akin to something Jung said about typical thinking. And this was the thinking of people who weren't trained to think. He said that the typical thinker has a thought. It appears to them like an object might appear in a room. The thought appears, and then they just accept it as true. They don't go the second step, which is to think about the thinking. And that's the real essence of critical thinking. And so that's what you try to teach people in university, is to read a text and to think about it critically, not to destroy the utility of the text, but to separate the wheat from the chaff. And so what I tried to do when I was reading the Communist Manifesto was to separate the wheat from the chaff. And I'm afraid I found some wheat, yes, but mostly chaff. And I'm going to explain why, hopefully in relatively short order. So I'm going to outline 10 of the fundamental axioms of the Communist Manifesto. And so these are truths that are basically held as self-evident by the authors. And
okay, so that's the short audio clip that I wanted to present. And it's, I think, the whole, before we get into the actual debate and the assertions and the propositions that are going to be presented on both sides of the argument, before we get into that, I thought that this was a really interesting way to consider such an intellectual challenge. And the intellectual challenge that Jordan Peterson put forward, I think, is a excellent, even a world-class framework by which when one can begin the thought process. And notice he used the term critical thinking a number of times. How should we consider such a thing critically? How should we engage our critical thinking apparatus by which we can understand the purpose and intent, the argument being put forward? You notice that he began to, he just touched on the intent of the Communist Manifesto was to initiate and to carry out revolutions. So it was a call for revolutions across the globe, actually. It was a call for revolutions in every industrial society. The workers of the world unite was their slogan. And so they were calling for a revolution. Now, the Communist Manifesto, as it turns out, is in fact a call for revolution. They are not satisfied with any kind of evolutionary process. They're not satisfied with the gradualism. They're not satisfied with most other forms of socioeconomic thought. There are focused entirely on revolutionary change, which of course is quick. They want it quick, bloody, quick and dirty. They want it bloody is fine, but they want a complete eradication of private property. And that's the whole idea behind it. All right, so I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So Jordan Peterson's brilliant introduction is to let us engage ourselves in critical thinking as we consider such a set of arguments, such a document, such a series of propositions. Let us consider such a thing critically. All right. So now there's a couple of other ways that we can do this. I'm going to present my thoughts on the subject, these are not the only legitimate thoughts, of course. There are others. And we'll cover, some of the other basic ideas as we go forward in the show. I'm thinking perhaps even next week we'll cover some of the things that are being presented by others that are working in this field of critical thinking. But what I found to be fascinating was the fact that what Jordan Peterson just presented, which is, let me paraphrase it again so we can truly understand it. what he presented was this idea that we should consider all thoughts, if we want to be objective, right, we should consider all thoughts, whether it's our own thoughts or whether it's the ideas of others, to be wrong, and let's prove that proposition either correct or incorrect. And so in other words, if we assume something is wrong, then we try to prove that tenet, prove that assertion. And if we can't bring to bear something that actually proves that, then by definition, it most likely is true. So if we assume that all ideas are likely to be false, not that they are, in fact, false, but they are likely to be false, let's find out if that is true. And if we can't prove that they are false, then they are most likely true, recognizing that we live in a world of uncertainty. This is not a deterministic world. As much as some people want you to believe that it is not. And that's why we need critical thinking, because many things are not deterministic. Many things exist in the realm of likelihoods, of possibilities, of probabilities. And so if that's true, then it's true. If that is true across the board, then we need to be able to deal with that in some kind of intellectually powerful way. And one of the ways, in fact, probably one of the best ways, is what Jordan Peterson is talking about, which is to be skeptical. So skepticism is the order of the day, to be skeptical about things, to look at things objectively. How do I know objectively that such and such is true or not true? How do we determine that? Are there ways that we can do such a thing? And to be skeptical is the key, I think, across the board to our success as a individual, as a peoples, as a society, country, what have you, is to be skeptical. Now, as we go forward, there really is a fascinating discussion, and I'm going to call it a fascinating body of knowledge that exists. I'll talk briefly about it. Now, I've mentioned this body of knowledge before on some time ago on this radio show, and it comes from this book, which goes by a couple of titles, and so it's a little bit confusing. All right, so the original book is called The Four Agreements, and The Four Agreements is authored by Don Miguel Ruiz. Don Miguel Ruiz is he's actually a physician, and he's also a shaman in the tradition of South American shamans. Most specifically, he is a Toltec, or he subscribes to Toltec wisdom. So he's a shaman and a wise person, if you will. Now, he's got this, originally it was called The Four Agreements. Now it's called The Fifth Agreement, but you can get this book anywhere. It's available nationally. Published by Amber Allen Publishing, and really is a great life lesson for all of us. I found it to be very useful in trying to understand what is going on in our world and how should we think about our place in the world that we live in. The fifth agreement in this book, or in this body of knowledge, the fifth agreement says this. It brings forth what we call, or what what he calls the power of doubt. It says specifically to be skeptical, but to learn to listen. And so let me read a little bit from this, from the introduction portion of this particular agreement, which is the fifth agreement, which is to be skeptical, but learn to listen. And it's really quite fascinating. The fifth agreement is to be skeptical, but learn to listen. Be skeptical because most of what you hear isn't true. You know that humans speak with symbols and that symbols aren't the truth. Symbols are only the truth because we agree, not because they are really the truth. But, he says, the second half of the agreement is learn to listen. And the reason is simple. When you learn to listen, you understand the meaning of the symbols that people are using. You understand their story, and the communication improves a lot. Then perhaps, instead of all the confusion among humans who inhabit the earth, there will be clarity. Once you realize that hardly anything you know through symbols is true, then be skeptical has a much bigger meaning. Be skeptical is masterful because it uses the power of doubt to discern the truth. Whenever you hear a message from yourself or from another artist, person, or entity, simply ask, is it truth or is it not truth? Is it reality or is it a virtual reality? The doubt takes you behind the symbols and makes you responsible for every message you deliver and receive. Why would you want to invest your faith in any message that is not true? By being skeptical, you don't believe every message. You don't put your faith in symbols. And when your faith is not in symbols, your faith is in yourself. Okay, so that's exactly what Jordan Peterson is talking about as we consider what he is about to discuss in this this debate with a Marxist professor. And so the debate is capitalism, and I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit. The debate is capitalism versus neo-Marxism. Neo-Marxism is kind of like the modern version of Marxism. Largely the same. There is a few little minor differences and additions in neo-Marxism, but it's largely the same Marxism that was first proposed back in 1848 when the Communist Manifesto was written and published. And we're going to get into that, this debate, and Jordan Peterson's rather fascinating discussion of the Communist Manifesto and what it says and why is there such a belief system out there that is called Marxism or, better yet, is called neo-Marxism. Let me continue the fifth agreement, because I think it's important as we go forward as to really try to understand what is this all about and how can this help us in our efforts to think critically. Now, Dr. Ruiz goes on to say in his book, but skepticism can go in two directions. One way is to pretend to be skeptical because you think you're too smart to be gullible. Look at how intelligent I am, so to speak. This is not skepticism. To be skeptical is not to believe everything you hear, and you don't believe because it's not the truth. That's all. The way to be skeptical is just to be aware that the entire humanity believes in lies. You know that humans distort truth because we are all dreaming, and our dream is just a reflection of what we think is the truth. Every artist or person, he used the word artist to describe us humans, I guess. Every artist distorts the truth, but you don't need to judge what somebody says or call that person a liar. All of us tell lies in one way or another, and that's not because we want to lie. It's because of what we believe. It's because of the symbols we learned and the way we are applying all those symbols. Once you are aware of this, the fifth agreement makes a lot of sense, and it can make a very big difference in your life. So he goes on to say things like truth or fiction. You don't have to believe anyone's story. You don't have to form an opinion about what someone says. You don't have to express your own opinion. You don't have to agree or disagree. Just listen. The more impeccable a person is with the word, the clearer the message will be. But the words that come from another artist or person have nothing to do with you. You know that it's nothing personal. You listen and you understand all the words, but the words no longer affect you. You no longer judge what other people say because you understand what they are doing. They are only letting you know what is going on in their own virtual world. You already have the awareness that all artists and people live in their own dream, in their own world. In that world, whatever they perceive is true for them, and it could be that it's absolutely true for the artists who are expressing this story, but it's not true for you. So basically, what if we could put this in the context of trying to understand this document that Jordan Peterson is discussing in this debate. The document is called the Communist Manifesto. It's written by Marx and Engels back in 1848. And if we think of it in the context that Jordan Peterson is presenting, think of it in the context that Don Miguel Ruiz is presenting, then we can perhaps approach it with clarity and comprehension and understand where the authors are coming from and why has such a thing been produced in the marketplace of ideas and what is their frame of reference. Okay, now, That's one of the most important things that as we go forward in our lives and as we go forward in trying to be critical thinkers, that is probably one of the most important things that we have to consider is what is our frame of reference and what is their frame of reference. And so in the particular case here that we're doing, and we can think of this as a case study, in this particular case, we should consider, ask ourselves, what is the frame of reference that Marx and Engels has had when they were in the process of writing the Communist Manifesto? What is the particular frame of reference? Right. First and foremost, if you're going to look, you can do some research and to try to understand where this thing came from and how is it that we have such a document in the first place, we have to understand that this was not the first attempt at writing such a document. There was other attempts, other documents out there in the literature, if you will, of the day. And so this is not the first attempt. But what is their frame of reference? Their frame of reference is pretty clear, and it's understandable. But you notice that once you understand their frame of reference, you begin to see how limited it is. Their frame of reference is that human existence is based upon what they call class struggle. So first and foremost, humans are in fact engaged in class struggle. Now, they're placing this within the framework of an industrial society. They're not placing this in the framework of a pre-industrial society. So you begin to question the assertion right up front and saying, okay, is this time specific, or is this an overarching concept that embraces all humanity within all recorded history? And the answer is no, it doesn't embrace all humanity within all recorded history. It just takes a segment of human existence that is extant within a industrial society only. Anyway, they go on to say that human society can be understood in terms of, or I say human society, human existence can be understood in terms of class struggle. The human condition is mostly about class struggle, and class struggle is defined as, and they use these terms, the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. And so let me explain that. Those are a little hard to understand from our understanding of language. These are old terms. These are old European terms. All right. The bourgeoisie are the owners of the property, or owners of the means of production, and the proletariat are literally those without. That's what that term means. Literally, it means those without, or those that do not own property, private property, don't own it, and therefore they are without ownership. So we can say that they are the owners and those that are without ownership. So class struggle exists within that dichotomy, or that it's a binary distribution of humanity into two large groupings, and that's what they believe in. Now, you know, first and foremost, that assertion is seriously questioned by Jordan Peterson. He does a great job of it. We're going to get into that later. All right. But that is the frame of reference that is being used. Now, it doesn't, you know, it's not explicitly said in this particular document, this particular work, if you will, this particular set of ideas. But that's the frame of reference, and we have to understand that by looking at the thing more objectively and certainly more critically. We have to be able to clarify exactly where is it coming from. And in doing so, we can begin then to address ourselves in a meaningful way to understanding it and to see if it holds up to scrutiny. Now, that's one of the keys to what I call successful falsification. It assumes that people are not going to hold it up to scrutiny to see if it objectively stands on its own merits. Okay, that is very, very important to understand. Does the argument stand on its own merits, or does it have to be propped up by something else? And that's one of the keys to understanding things from a clarity perspective, to clarify the actual. That's one of the keys, of course, that we talked about many, many times about critical thinking. The first order of business within the critical thinking model is to clarify the actual. That's the key here, too. So what is the overall validity of the document and its arguments? The first assertion is class struggle, and Jordan Peterson questions that, brings that into question, looks at it objectively and critically, and concludes that is not, in fact, the proper frame of reference for this document, or in fact, any document dealing with the human condition. What's important, he says here, and I fully support this, I agree with this wholeheartedly, what's important here is do we have the proper frame of reference? And in this case, the authors did not have the proper frame of reference. And Jordan Peterson has presented what he considers to be the proper frame of reference, which is survival. He says the defining characteristic of the human condition is to be able to survive, to survive a hostile world, to be able to reproduce and to continue our species into the future. And survival is, in fact, the defining characteristic of the human condition, not class struggle. So he says that Marx and Engels got it completely wrong up front. The very beginning of the argument, the very frame of reference, he claims is completely wrong. The frame of reference ought to be and should be and continue to be survival, human survival. We must survive. We must do whatever it takes in order to survive. It has nothing to do with class. It has nothing to do with status. It has nothing to do with any of the above. It's nothing to do with ownership. It has to do with the ability to survive. And to that extent, humans have always cooperated in some form or fashion to help ensure survival. And how humans do that is determined in many cases by their particular location, their circumstances, and what seems to work. We could say it's trial and error, perhaps, what seems to work and what seems not to work. And we take that and then go forward in our efforts to understand what's going on. We'll take a short break and be right back. Okay, welcome back. As we conclude our show, we just have a few more minutes, and I want to read a couple of other fascinating excerpts from this book that I'm using here. As we begin to understand this debate of the century and what has happened between Jordan Peterson and his debater, Slavoj Zizek, I guess, capitalism versus Marxism and the meaning of happiness. Now, and we will cover this debate next week. And perhaps more, but certainly we need to give it justice. So we're going to continue this discussion with it next week. I think it's really fascinating, and this is a very important part of our going forward as critical thinkers to try to understand what's going on within this realm of politics or economic systems, if you will, or our place in the world, in this geopolitical world. Let me continue with this discussion that from this book, The Four Agreements. Just because other people want something, that doesn't mean you have to give them what they want. People are always trying to hook your attention because through the attention, they can download any information. Many times, you just don't want that information. You listen, you don't want it, you ignore it, and change directions. But if that information hooks your attention, then you really want to listen to find out what someone is saying is important to you. Then you can share your point of view if you want to, knowing that it's just a point of view. That's your choice, but the key is to listen. If you don't learn to listen, you will never understand what I am sharing with you right now. You will jump to conclusions and react like it's your dream when it's not your dream. When other artists are sharing their dream with you, just be aware that it's their dream. You know what your dream is and what your dream is not. Right now, I am sharing the way I perceive the world, and that's, I'm continuing with reading this book, by the way. Right now, I'm sharing the way I perceive the world, the way I dream, and my stories are truth for me, but I know they are not the real truth, so don't believe me. Whenever I tell you, let me reread that sentence. Whatever I tell you is just my point of view. Of course, from my point of view, I'm sharing the truth with you. I do my best to use words in the most impeccable way so that you can understand what I am saying. But even if I share an extra copy of the truth with you, I know that you will distort my message as soon as it goes from my mind to yours. You will hear the message and tell yourself the same message in a completely different way according to your point of view. Now, remember, I talked about frame of reference. All right, so frame of reference is a point of view. Okay, it's particularly important as we understand mental framing, if you will, or mental mapping. What occupies your mind space? What is your frame of reference as we are beginning our discussion about such and such? And that is a key thing to keep in mind. That's a very important question to ask yourself and ask others before we begin. What is your frame of reference? Do you know what your frame of reference is? Everybody has a frame of reference. So what is your frame of reference? If your frame of reference is higher order reasoning, then it is a more abstract, and it becomes, because it is more abstract, it becomes more objective. So remember that. A critical thinker thinks largely in terms of the abstract, doesn't think largely in terms of what is literal. A critical thinker utilizes the abstract in the best possible way to be able to clarify the actual. I can see we're at the end of the show, and so I'm going to say thank you for listening once again. We will continue our discussion of the debate of the century next week. Until then, we will, hopefully you have had a great Easter as I have, and I wish the very best for you and your family, and we will be back again next week. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.